You're listening to the ISF Podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve and I are in conversation about ISF's flagship Foresight report, Threat Horizon 2027, Grasping for Control. In a world defined by disruption and acceleration, this report offers not just a forecast of cyber threats, but a blueprint for resilience. And Steve is here to walk us through the key themes. Steve, welcome. Nice to be back with you.
Yes, very nice indeed. Nice to see you, Tavia.
Well, let's begin with that title. That's very provocative, Grasping for Control. What does that phrase mean in the context of the threat landscape today and over the next few years?
Well, I think it's trying to capture the reality that many organizations are facing today, and indeed will continue to face, of a world that is going to be in a state of constant upheaval. So by 2027, because the threat horizon, as you know, always looks forward, we're anticipating a lot of disruption from geopolitical conflict, natural disasters, and from, I suppose, the ever rapid technological shifts that we continue to see and have become a little bit more accustomed to. In that kind of shifting landscape, having control not just over your business, but also over your data and over ultimately your strategy, so you can find a way to navigate through all of this, that can be and will be, I think, extremely challenging. So what we're really trying to do in the report this time is help organizations understand, against that backdrop, how they can retain some form of control, and also, if they happen to have lost it or lose it, how they might regain it.
The focus of the report looks at three themes: identity, geopolitics, and data. So let's start with identity. We've talked about this before, but tell me why, in this context, is identity so important?
Well, identity is really the cornerstone of everything that we do in the digital world. And it's fast becoming one of the most critical areas for business leaders to understand and take seriously. And why do I say that? Because sadly, trust is eroding. And we've seen that trend emerging over the last few years. And in fact, we highlighted it back in Threat Horizon 2024, so a little while ago now. But now, of course, with AI becoming much more accessible, what we're starting to see is malicious actors using it to create much more convincing deepfakes, impersonations, and, of course, bots. And they're not just spoofing emails anymore. They're mimicking voices, generating faces, inserting fake identities into real systems, all of which is very, very easy to do, as most of our listeners will probably realize. You know, some of them may have even tried it themselves for fun rather than for malicious purposes, I would hope.
Yeah.
Depends on our audience, I suppose. But the serious point is, when you can't verify who you're dealing with, could be a customer, could be a supplier, you know, even your own employees, you suddenly find yourself in a very fragile position. And it doesn't just affect your security posture. It has the ability to really affect your entire operation and the way that it functions. And so that's why we say that identity underpins every action. Because whether it's logging into a system, approving a payment, signing a contract, you know, if you can't trust the identity behind the person that you're interacting with or who's doing it, then you're potentially in pretty big trouble. And it's worth mentioning as well that this isn't just a technology problem. You know, it is also a business problem because we're so dependent on these things. And leadership needs to treat identity management as something of a strategic priority, I'd suggest. You know, look at investing in the right controls. But more importantly, also look into things like governance, ongoing education and awareness. And I think that if people don't, then what we're going to see is a further erosion of the trust that exists between people and indeed organizations that we work with and that we transact business with.
It seems like we're facing an existential question. If we can't prove who we are online, then how do we build relationships with our customers, with our suppliers, with our employees, with our colleagues? What do we do?
Yeah, exactly. And identity is what enables safe collaboration. Not just that, but also things then like accountability and ultimately, as we've said, you know, trust. And without it, everything else, you know, data, operations, strategy, all start to break down. And that's really why we're urging organizations to think about how they might embed identity and access management into the business itself, not just into IT systems. And again, it does include governance. It does include auditing to make sure that you actually got it right. It does include user education. Can't really stress that enough. And then, of course, you do have to be able to respond quickly when things go wrong.
Let's move on to geopolitics. Everything is very calm, as far as I can see, but the report is very clear. That might not be the case. Geopolitics now impacts every business plan. What are the key risks here?
I've been talking about the importance of geopolitics and the relationship that it has, not just with security, but business in general, and the way in which both of those are evolving for a very, very long time. It's probably something like eight to 10 years. When we talk about it within this context, to a certain extent, I'm really pleased that we've picked it up as being something that we need to really understand better looking forward, because we're really talking about a shift in how the world works. And any shift will have deep implications for business. And for a long time, globalization gave organizations a pretty predictable environment to operate in. Some would argue that wasn't the case uniformly, but it was pretty stable. You could build, you know, your international supply chains, you could expand into new markets, you could rely on a degree of regulatory consistency across borders. And people like me were hoping, I think, probably even up to about 18 months ago, that we would begin to see a much more consistency of regulation. Mm-hmm. You know, none of that is the case anymore. We're seeing the world fragment into competing spheres of influence, whether that's economic, whether it's political, whether it's digital, or a combination of all of those, actually, which I think is really where we're headed. And different regions are implementing, just as an example, you know, their own data laws. Mm. We've got their own standards for AI, for instance. That's a little bit of a patchwork quilt emerging now. Now, again, I've been hoping that perhaps we'd be using that as a jumping off point for something along the lines of what we saw when it came to privacy, when we had GDPR come out. That's not going to be the case. And I think regions, as we continue to see, are now starting to put in place their own trade protections, whether that be in the form of tariffs or something else. So the effect of that is a kind of balkanization where what's acceptable in one country could be illegal or not acceptable in another. And for multinational organizations, that becomes incredibly hard to navigate.
Right.
At the same time, cyber has moved up the geopolitical agenda. This is really a feature of the fact that cyber has reached a degree of maturity in its evolutionary process. It is not just criminal actors anymore, you know, state-backed groups using cyber as a tool of diplomacy, disruption, and even warfare in some instances. And the targets are often businesses, particularly those in critical infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You could be a logistics company or a telecoms provider. And suddenly you find yourself in the middle of a geopolitical confrontation that you didn't ask for and weren't aware of. And so that's really why we're encouraging organizations to plan for volatility, not to guess exactly what will happen, because you can't in this kind of market, but to build the kind of resilience that allows you to adapt when it does. And specifically, that means strengthening your supply chain relationships, identifying things like alternate routes or providers, investing in scenario planning. I think that's hugely important. Mm-hmm. And of course, keep an eye on regulatory trends. Flexibility, I think, is the watchword. You know, that's going to be the most valuable strategic asset over the next few years.
So if I'm a business leader listening right now, those are some things that I should be doing to prepare for the kind of instability we're seeing. But what else should I do?
Well, I think any business leader who's listening is probably sitting there scratching their heads, trying to come to terms with the way in which things have been turned upside down within an exceptionally short space of time, simply by implementation of tariffs coming out of America, and indeed the response that we've seen all around the world to those particular tariffs. So I think that's what's occupying people's minds, of course, because it's a really good example, actually, of what we're talking about here. Because on the one hand, some people might say, well, what's that got to do with security? Mm-hmm. The answer is it actually has everything to do with security. Because when you start to do things like impose tariffs, you start to draw into question the way in which trade operates around the world, which impacts businesses.
Right.
Businesses can't function without technology. If you are dependent upon technology, you have a security issue. And so this intertwining of all of these different component pieces is something that, for me, shows that cyber has started to come of age. Back to the question that you had, you know, is, well, that's all very well, Steve. We're in the middle of it. We know that. But what can we do to prepare for this kind of stability going forward? The first thing I would say is do stress test your strategy. Look at how it holds up under a number of different futures, not just the most likely one. When we put together strategy, I like to think that people still don't view it as being a sort of a multi-year thing, because the reality is that a strategy is only a statement of direction now. Mm-hmm. How you implement it has to be so dynamic to be successful in today's business world. But you do have to play out a number of different scenarios and look at how you're going to respond if certain things come to pass. That means you're going to have to build in things like operational resilience, not just in your infrastructure, but really importantly, again, across your supply chain. Now, some organizations may have had a practice run of that with what happened in Ukraine when we had the Russian invasion there. But again, in a world where some of the rather shaky foundations of trade have really been rocked and some would say destroyed of late, you've got to really think outside the box and begin to plan all over again. And that means that you need to have a much better handle on regulation. So regulatory foresight has to be part of your planning. You need to understand what the landscape is in the different regions in which you're going to ideally be successful. And it's not just about reacting to new laws, but really trying to anticipate them. And that means that you need to engage with policymakers. Very difficult, you know, for smaller organizations to do this. Mm-hmm. Multinationals, yes, okay. They've probably got, you know, a significant number of people who've been scratching their heads around all of this for quite some while. Right. If you're a smaller to mid-sized enterprise, you won't have that resource. And so that's why I go back to being so important for you to stress test multiple scenarios for the way in which things might evolve. And flexibility and informed foresight, the best you can do, those are really going to be essential currencies for navigating what's coming.
Hmm. Sounds like maybe fortune tellers and novelists will have job security in the coming years. Let's talk about data. You say in the report that data sustains every business and it also presents enormous risk. With AI becoming ever more integrated into our lives, our businesses, our decisions, that risk can only be exponentially growing. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, data for me has always been the challenging piece. You know, we've talked a lot in the past, haven't we, about some of the concerns I've had, not just about the confidentiality or the availability of data, but also for me, the integrity of it is the mm-hmm. really big one. And that's the one, again, when we start to talk about AI, that really has to come front and center in terms of focus and attention. And that's because data fuels everything: operations, strategy, decision making, and increasingly, of course, it's being used to fuel AI. And so that does mean that the quality of that data, the integrity of that data, is directly going to affect the quality and the integrity of the decisions that right. ultimately you make, because you're so dependent upon these elements.
But the report also warns that data integrity is under increasing threat. So what's the core message? What's the answer? Solve this for us.
A growing challenge is that the data is being polluted. Now, sometimes that's accidental. Sometimes it's deliberate. Misinformation campaigns, bot activity, data poisoning, you know, all of those, they're all tactics that are being used that security professionals are aware of that undermine the information we rely on. And if AI systems that you're trusting have been trained on compromised data, then they're going to generate compromised outcomes. You know, that could be things like flawed analytics, biased predictions, or importantly, perhaps, or concerningly, operational failures. Mm. And then we've got this other issue of what we call shadow AI, which I think is going to be one of the biggest risks organizations face. So you've got well-meaning teams experimenting with AI tools without any sort of formal oversight. Mm-hmm. They're moving quickly because they've been told to move quickly. You know, they're trying to innovate because these are some of the new buzzwords. But in doing so, they could be introducing vulnerabilities or leaking sensitive data or violating compliance requirements, for instance, getting into, you know, regulatory hot water. And the solution absolutely isn't to stop them. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. It's about providing guidance. And so every organization needs to have clear governance frameworks for data and for AI. Need to have in place things like, you know, defensive tools that can monitor and respond to threats, for instance, something that AI is pretty good at doing. But to have these sorts of things, we've also got to have considered some of the ethical foundations around it. I'm thinking about, you know, how do we collect the data? How are we using it? Are we being transparent? Are we protecting intellectual property, protecting customer trust? Societal values, depending on the sort of business that you happen to be in, you know, these are all the sorts of things that you've got to take into account. Because if we get it wrong, if we just treat data that we're using as any other asset rather than a responsibility, consequences are going to be really quite significant. Right. But if we get it right, if we approach data with the seriousness and respect it deserves, then I really do think that it can become something of a competitive differentiator. But I don't think, sadly, many businesses are at that point of understanding yet. I mean, we've done some recent work. ISF members will be familiar with Lee Munson's paper on AI governance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that really jumped out to me from that when I looked at it was that Lee estimates that about half of the people that he spoke to in producing that paper, so across our membership and outside, about half of them didn't have any form of AI governance in place, and yet they were using it. And well, that's a huge number when you think about the potential implications for that.
That is a huge number. It seems like a lot of this comes back to building not only great technical systems, but great human and cultural systems that can respond to uncertainty. Is that true?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, we talk a lot about embedding a cybersecurity culture, don't we? And that's really where real resilience comes from. It's not just about buying new tools. It's about aligning cyber risk with business goals, giving people a sense of ownership and creating a shared understanding of really what's at stake with all of this.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. What can senior leaders do today to get ahead of what's coming in 2027?
Good question, really, because obviously, you know, whenever we talk about the threat horizon, we tend to focus on some of the sort of negative aspects, don't we?
A little bit, yeah.
That's the nature of the beast. But, you know, when I think about it, I think there are probably five areas, I would say, where leaders really do need to focus. So first, I think it does start with recognizing that cybersecurity isn't just a support function. It's absolutely central to business resilience. And that means it has to be built into the business strategy itself and not just sort of retrofitted or bolted on as an afterthought. Then there's the financial side. Leaders need to understand the economic impact of cyber risk. What are the potential costs of disruption? How would a breach affect reputation, revenue, operations? You know, it's the reputational bit, for instance, in my case, that worries me the most. And once you start thinking in those terms, you can make many more business-aligned, informed decisions about what you're going to do because you stop looking at the cost of doing something and instead you flip it and look at the implications and associated costs of not doing it.
Right.
And that is, I think, a really important thing for leaders to do because it's all, particularly in the current sort of market conditions, you know, where everybody is scrabbling around for the last pound, note, dollar, euro, yen, whatever it happens to be. It's about providing some form of context and really thinking through what level of return are you going to get on your investment. And it has to be said that security people have never been the best at explaining that. So I think a lot more questioning in that space would help from the business side of the house.
Right.
Thirdly, culture plays a massive role. Embedding security into your day-to-day culture on every level of the organization ensures that security isn't just the job of a select few. You know, you don't do security to somebody. It is everybody's responsibility. And then you've got what I would call alignment. So cyber really does need to be fully aligned with the broader business needs. And that means knowing what your crown jewels are. You can't aim or hope to protect every single asset across the enterprise. You have to know what your most critical assets are, and you have to make sure that you're protecting them in an appropriate fashion. And then finally, none of this works without really strong fundamentals. You do need solid foundations, processes, protocols, practices, mm-hmm. sorts of things that at the ISF we talk about in our standard good practice that so many organizations implement now around the world. You need those solid foundations that can adapt as the threat landscape evolves and changes, because without those, the rest can fall apart pretty quickly.
Mm. You haven't mentioned the board, but tell me what role the board plays in all of this.
Yeah, it's a critical one. It really is. I've been working with boards now for quite some while, as you know, not just at the ISF, but also down at Henley through the business school down there mm-hmm. on the board development program. And we've seen a shift. Boards now understand they need to ask the right questions. Mm. They just might not know what those right questions are. And so they're still struggling in that space, I would suggest. But, you know, some of those right questions would be, well, who's responsible for data use? How are we managing risk appetite? How's that different? How has that changed? What might a cyber incident mean for our customers, you know, our regulators, our reputation, our staff? Mm. So it's really about the board taking its role of the overall custodian of the organization very, very seriously when it comes to cyber, and thinking long and hard about how cyber can be embedded as a strategic enabler in the business, mm-hmm. as I said before, as an afterthought or a tick box compliance exercise.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a shift. I don't think you've ever reported that the board has been as on board as what you're just reporting. So that seems like a positive development.
It is a positive development. It really is. Again, of course, once boards become curious, then some cynics would say that leads to a lot more work. But at the same time, I think it's a healthy interest that's probably long overdue.
Well, no cynics here. Before we close, I want to return to a powerful image in the title, Grasping for Control. In a world that may feel increasingly ungovernable, do you have a sort of key message that you want to leave leaders who are listening today?
Yeah, I think that business leaders as a group tend to be pretty resilient individuals. Mm. You know, I've worked a lot with entrepreneurs, as you know, and they are probably some of the most resilient that I've ever come across, because they have to be.
Right.
And one of the things that they always believe in, I've found, is that irrespective of what's going on around you, control is still possible. But in order to have that level of control, it takes foresight, it takes focus, and I think above all, it takes flexibility, and I would say courage. You cannot keep sticking to a route that perhaps is flawed or isn't going to take you to where you need to go if the market conditions have changed. And so you have to change that. And that, I think, can require some incredibly brave decisions to be made along the way. And similarly, you know, if you take that into the whole threat horizon space, you know, we can't predict every threat. It's impossible. What we can do is prepare for some form of disruption, look at how we might protect the most critical of our assets. And we can continue to invest in our people, in our culture, in our strategy, because those are the things we're going to have to use to get us out of the mess that inevitably we'll fall into at some point in time. And if we do all of that well, then we don't just survive, then we thrive. And I think that's the key message. You know, for many people listening to this, the sorts of upheavals that we're seeing economically around the world at the moment will be the first time they've seen it in a very long while. 2008 was the last recession.
Right.
I'm not saying that's where we're headed, but there's a fair old chance that we're going to see a lot more disruption before we reach calmer waters again. You know, in my experience, the companies that tend to thrive in that are the ones that are exceptionally agile, they are flexible, and they take courageous and brave decisions. But it has to be founded on data. And of course, that brings us round to making sure that the data you're using hasn't been tampered with in any way, shape, or form. And it's also, I think, worth realizing that it's one area where technology, and in particular AI, probably isn't going to come to the rescue. Mm. It's going to be much more down to the leaders in the business understanding what they have to do and how they can enable their people to do the necessary in order to thrive in challenging times.
Well, it always comes back to people.
It does.
Well, thank you for your clarity and your insight on Threat Horizon 2027. An enjoyable conversation, and not all bad. So
no, not this time. No,
not this time. It's a nice point to leave off on. Thank you so much. We'll see you again.
Thanks, David.
We'll be back with another new episode next week. In the meantime, if you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. And we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become an ISF member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.